Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight from the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show. The Horrible Ooh, Shaking All Over from Live at Leeds.
I don't know how to speak after listening to that track. It's so intense.
Oh, it's incredible.
It's huge.
It is huge. And just one thing about amplifiers straight away, he was using high-watt amplifiers.
Really?
This is Townsend, of course, Pete Townsend, and so was John Entwistle.
That's cool.
Yeah.
We love high watt.
We do.
Because, of course, I've got a high watt DR-201 bass.
You have, yeah. And you're now supported by High Watt. You lucky girl.
So excited. I know, part of the family. I still can't believe it.
Yeah. And the racket he was creating on that track, I mean, holy moly, it was incredible.
Yeah. It has mashed my head, actually, because I really listened to that song. I'm like, oh, wow.
I know the power. And, you know, I mean, he seems to... Well, he does play loads and loads of notes, Giant Whistle, but it's sort of... It's kind of musical, and it fits in with the frantic drummer, because everything's frantic except the guitar, really, because the guitar's pretty solid. But he's really the lead instrument in that whole band, isn't he, you know, Entwistle?
Yeah. Well,
and a great song written by Johnny Kidd.
Indeed. Do you know, there's a really interesting thing about this song as well. Of course, they performed it at Woodstock, you know that, and also live at Leeds in 1970. It's just that, you know, that this song was actually originally, well, not, Johnny Kidd wrote it, yeah.
He did.
But there was another band who covered it called the Guess Who.
Ah.
Now, what happened, and this is actually from an interview, saying John Entwistle said that people constantly got the Who and the Guess who are the Canadian rock band.
Indeed.
Right, they got them mixed up. So the crowd were shouting at the Who for them to sing Shaking All Over, which is actually the song that the Guess Who covered.
No.
Yeah, yeah. So, and apparently the Guess Who had the same problem with the crowd shouting, "Play My Generation!"
Can you imagine the confusion?
Exactly. So I'm even confused trying to work that out, and I wrote that down just trying to express it. So what actually happened as well, which is another interesting, just a quick aside, right? The Guess Who were actually known as the Chad Allen and the Expressions.
No.
Really cool name, eh? Chad Allen and the Expressions. And that
you can imagine the suits that they were wearing, couldn't you, really?
I know.
Hi, my name's Chad.
Chad. It's the Chad that reminds me of the Chad, isn't that, off Forrest Gump?
Yeah, that's yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So anyway, that's the name of the band before they released Shaking All Over. But the label, the Canadian label, Quality Records, issued the record as recorded by Guess Who, with a question mark, and it was an attempt to imply that the record might be a British invasion.
No, is yeah, that right? So yeah, they were trying to hang on the British thing.
Mm-hmm. And then a few months later, it came out that it was really Chad.
Right.
Chad. And yet DJs were still calling it the Guess Who, because I think it stuck. Now, wow. That's really interesting, isn't it?
It is.
And so then you've got the repercussions of all that going on with different people, different audiences asking the Who to play the Guess Who song and blah, blah, blah.
Amazing.
Anyway, yeah. And that actually was, this mix that we've used was remixed live at the Live at Leeds version, and it was remixed by our friend John Astley.
Yeah, and Andy Mike. Andy Mike Furstman from Revolution in Manchester, see? Which I know very well.
Indeed.
And John mastered our last record,
Blueberry Pie,
yeah.
I know.
So it's all a big
skill.
Big family, yeah.
It is.
And it's a tremendous racket. Well done, John. We'll be right back.
Black Sabbath. Black Sabbath.
You weren't expecting that,
no.
Were you?
No. That made me laugh. It's a bit of a shocker.
Last note, Lucy. You're normally like that.
When we play live,
we're always vying for the last note, you know.
We are. What can you say? That was released on my brother's birthday, actually, the 13th of February, but in 1970.
The 13th, of course.
Indeed. Ooh.
I mean, you know, Tony Iommi is the riffmaster. There's no doubt. I mean, there's Jimmy Page, there's Blackmore, there's all these guys. But to me, Tony Iommi really had it. He created some monster licks, absolute monster licks, monster riffs. And I think he's a little bit underappreciated. Everybody talks about Jimmy Page, you know, but I really do believe that Tony Iommi, you know, dare I say, is actually more riffmeister than Page.
Yeah, you feel very strongly about that. I know this.
And you know the other thing as well, and I hear loads of heavy guitar players now, loads of them, and they play with massive amounts of distortion. And you listen to that track, and Iommi, it was clean in parts, absolutely clean, but just as menacing. In fact, it was more menacing because when he, you know, he backed his volume off and you could hear it go clean. And then when he turned it up with that fuzz, it was unbelievable. And they did it. How long did it take him to do this record?
They recorded it in 12 hours. They just basically in one day, 12-hour session, they recorded the whole album.
They just did the live set. Is that right?
Yeah, they did their live set. Recorded their live set, and Ozzy apparently said they were in. They got to the pub in time for last orders. My kind of guy.
Flipping heck. But the whole band, I mean, again, listening on headphones, you can hear slight timing errors and all that sort of thing in that. But it really doesn't matter. They did it all live, and the energy of that record.
Yeah.
And Black Sabbath, you know, started the whole heavy rock movement, you know, and all the bands that are out there now playing, you know, the doom and all these sort of things really started, you know, with this band.
Fantastic stories.
It is, isn't it? And they've got some hell of a stories. I mean, you know, I mean, Ozzy Osbourne, my goodness me. And I've actually got a funny story about this. I'll tell it, yeah.
Go on.
One day I happened to be in the Apollo in Manchester. And at the time, I was doing some sound engineering work, and I was called out because the monitors of Black Sabbath's drummer at the time weren't loud enough. Okay. And I went up to the Apollo and went on stage, and it's Cozy Powell playing drums. Of course, he wasn't there. He was drunk in the back, I would have thought, at that time. But his roadie was there. And I said, okay, well, just play the kick drum and let's see, you know, what's the problem with this monitor. Well, I sat on Cozy's stool, which is like a hallowed thing, walked past Tony Iommi's amplifiers, which is like I did have a little I'm not worthy moment, you know what I mean, bowing down there.
Yeah.
Right. And I sat on the drum stool and I hit the kick drum with my foot. And I'm not kidding. It felt like somebody was compressing my head and my body, the volume. And then the roadie turned around at me and said, see what I mean? It's not loud enough. I went, holy moly. Well, I didn't say that. I said something a bit stronger than that. Anyway.
Wow.
That's a story. A rock and roll story.
Rock and roll.
In front of me. Got no rhyme or reason for what you did to me. Didn't look around me, I was living in a dream. What was I thinking, baby? Throwing good after the bad. Hindsight's 20/20, as far as I can see. But when
Hindsight by Matt Schofield from the album Far As I Can See.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That was released, what, 2014, that one?
Mm. Now, arguably, Britain's finest blues, rock, sort of jazz, funky guitar player.
Yep.
A country mile. Yeah, country mile. Great tone, great sensibility when it comes to his notes. You know, I think he's got away from that rugby when he started off. He sounded very Robin Ford to me, but now he's got really his own chops going on. And he, you know, fantastic, really great. I saw him do a full hour program on the Pedal Show. I think it was from before Christmas. I posted it on my Facebook page, and it was fantastic. He was what a lovely, humble guy as well.
I'm going to say Matt comes across really, really lovely, doesn't he? Like just. No ego, just on the level. But then he was born in Manchester.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Well, I like that. There's definitely an earthy sensibility about him, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, and he's got a great band. I mean, bit of a plug here that Johnny Henderson played on the Stark Campbell Band Blue Ribbon Pie album.
Yeah, we went with Johnny.
On the sessions, and we're going to be out on tour with him this year. So we're in very esteemed company. He's another beautiful, very humble, cool guy. You know, he's really cool, Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny is cool, but there's one issue I've got with Johnny, and it's that he plays bass with his left hand, and where's the bass player?
Yeah.
You know, okay, so like Matt Schofield and Johnny Henderson doing this trio thing, right, which gives them this unique kind of edge, something that was probably done in the 50s, 60s, but, you know, as a bass player.
Yeah, it's that Jimmy Smith thing, isn't it? And you know,
exactly.
he's got the pedals as well, the foot pedals.
And I get that.
But there's a bass on this track, though.
I know, yes. I looked him up. It's called Carl Stanbridge.
Cool.
So he played bass on this. And there's definitely a different textural thing you can get. And I totally, you know, and we did have a laugh with Johnny about this because I was sort of pretending to take offence, really. It's a bit also like when I see somebody playing a 5-string bass, I'm like, I want to cut that extra string off. It's like,
well, we said next
bother?
Time we saw him, we get some snippers and cut it off, didn't we?
Yeah, it's like you only need four.
It's
know?
Too low, man.
It's far too low. And you just get one of those switches if you just want to go down to the, you know, get the bottom E to the D. But other than that, you're just invading somebody else's turf, you know?
Yeah,
your sonic
turf
invader.
Well, you know. And that's one great thing, just talking about Johnny again, it's talking about sonic turf, he's great at actually positioning his chords and everything in the right place, so it sort of fits in the track, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, waxing lyrical about
yes,
Johnny
anyway.
Here. But anyway,
Matt Schofield. Yes, he was actually in Dana Gillespie's band, and he kind of earned his, you know, he sort of worked his way through. He was in a few bands, and he was in Dana's band, and he's actually recorded 5 studio albums and 4 live albums.
Mm.
Which is really beautiful. And I'm going to read this quote because this is what I've taken this directly off Matt's website because
okay.
I had a look earlier. And he says that my inspiration and goals came from many places. My influences, old and new, including musicians I've wanted to collaborate with for years and things that I still feel I haven't fully realised on previous studio records and I need to keep pushing myself. It all meets at the place where I'm heading now. I'm always aiming to go as far as possible to capturing the same connection with the listener that I aim to make at a live show or on record. That's the goal.
It's the holy grail
capturing
of
that
all
special
musicians.
Moment.
Yeah,
yeah,
because you inevitably you do a record and you come out and think, flipping out, that doesn't sound as good as it does live, you know?
Yeah. Isn't that beautiful, though?
Beautiful.
Help the poor.
Help the poor.
Won't you help for me?
Help for me.
I need help from you, baby. Need it desperately. I need you so much. I need your care. I need all the loving, baby, you can spare. Help the poor. Oh, baby, help poor me. Say you will. Say you'll help me on. I can't make it no further. You could make me be a king. But if you don't come to my rescue, I couldn't ever be anything. Help the poor.
Help the poor.
Baby, help poor me.
Help poor me.
Have a heart, won't you, baby? Listen to my plea. Help the poor. Oh, baby, won't you help poor me? I'm in trouble, don't you see? Only your love can save me. Help the poor.
The beautiful B.B. King, Help the Poor. That's taken from his 20th studio album, L.A. Midnight, which was released in 1972.
Mm. And I think it was on Live at the Regal, which is his classic, which is obviously a live album, and that was one of the first B.B. King album I bought on recommendation of, it's gone. My mind has just gone blank for a second. Anyway, but yeah, I bought it and, you know, it changed my life really, you know, because for the first few years of playing guitar, I didn't realise I was a blues guitar player. And I thought I was a rock player. And somebody said to me, "Say, oh, you really, you know, you can really play the blues." And I said, "Oh, I don't. I play a rock guitar." And I said, no, you're a blues player. Just listen to this." And that was it. And I listened to it. I thought, "Holy shit, I am." That was accidental. Very funny, actually. Anyway, B.B. King.
That's a great album, though. You played that to me as an introduction to the blues and to B.B. to me as well.
That's right. But also, you know, Robin Ford did a fantastic version on it of Talk to Your Daughter, which is, again, you know, talking about Matt Schofield before Robin Ford. I mean, Robin Ford, that first album that really broke, you know, him. He's always been big, you know, gradually getting bigger, but he did a magnificent job at that. Anyway, back to B.B.
Yeah, well, I love, you know, what I really love about that particular song is it's the old version, because there are lots of more modern versions that I've heard, which I love the pace of that. It's very, it's slow, it's relaxed, and it's happy to be that slow, that tempo.
Yeah, I get it.
And look, when I hear people cover it these days, they tend to rush it. And I'm all for like laying right back, you know, and I think there is a tendency for people to push things a little sometimes, and some songs just don't need it. That this particular song for me is it flies more when it has that space. So there's my two P's worth, really.
Well, I think you are right, definitely. And for a drummer to keep a slow tempo, that I think is really hard. It's much easier up tempo.
Yeah,
you know, you talk about Bill Ward earlier on you know, with that Black Sabbath track. I mean, that is so fiendishly slow.
Yeah.
You know, and to keep that groove, that slow groove all the way through it, and you know, and of course, BB's drummer on this does a fantastic job.
Now, do you know, it's really odd, but I forgot about why he was called BB. And it's only because I realised, and when I was looking this again, that he got the nickname Beale Street Blues Boy, which was later shortened to Blues Boy and finally to BB.
I didn't know it was Beale Street Blues Boy. I knew it was Blues
Initially,
Boy.
Initially, his nickname, yeah, was Beale Street Blues Boy.
Well, BB, who hasn't he inspired? And I remember seeing him. I saw him twice, actually. And the first time
that's
I saw him.
That's amazing.
Yeah, well, it was. I saw it with the Apollo in Manchester. It was fantastic. And I remember his band struck up, and I'm not kidding, they must have been playing for about 7 or 8 minutes before he came on. Just the, you know, the horns and the organ, and they had this massive black guy behind the organ, the MD, you know, and he was just loving it, you know, absolutely just loving it and giving it all the stuff. And you were building it, you were waiting for it to come out, and eventually somebody came, walked in and went, "Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. B. King," and he came on, and everybody went absolutely bananas, and he just comes, one note, and I virtually fell over in rapture. It was like it's a religious experience. I was like, this B.B. King, and that note, and his tone, you know, boing, one note. Anyway, that's all you need, one note.
Mm-hmm. you gassed her and a wheel, with your arm around your sweet one, your Oldsmobile, barreling down the boulevard. You're looking for the heart of Saturday night, and you got paid on Friday, and your pockets are jingling, and you see the lights, and you get all tingling, cause you're cruising with a six, and you're looking for the heart of Saturday night. And then you comb your hair, shave your face, trying to wipe out every trace of all the other days. In a week, you know that this will be the Saturday you're reaching your peak, stopping on the red, you're going on the green, cause tonight will be like nothing you've ever seen, and you're barreling down the boulevard. Looking for the heart of Saturday night. Tell me, is it the crack of the pool balls, neon buzzing, telephones ringing, it's your second cousin? Is it the barmaid smiling in the corner of her eye, magic or the melancholy tearing your eye? Exit kind of quiver down in the cove, cause you're dreaming of them Saturdays that came before, and now you're stumbling. You're stumbling onto the heart of Saturday night. You gassed her up and you're behind the wheel, with your arm around your sweet one, your Oldsmobile, barreling down the boulevard. Looking for the heart of Saturday night. Is it the crack of the pool balls, neon buzzing, telephones ringing, it's your second cousin, and the barmaid is smiling in the corner of her eye, magic or the melancholy tearing your eye? Makes it kind of special down in the core, and you're dreaming of them Saturdays that came before. It's found you stumbling, stumbling onto the heart of Saturday night, and you're stumbling, stumbling onto the heart of Saturday night.
He's like that, isn't he?
He is, yeah. On that, though, he's actually singing. In a lot of the things, the Swordfish Trombones, he sounds like he's, he's got his mouth full of marbles and grizzle and grit and all sorts of stuff, you know? But there, he really is he's singing. The lyrics are great on that. I just love that song and the easy, you know, the real easy groove. And it's a beautiful, you know, subject matter, and it's just great.
Yeah, it was written as a tribute to Jack Kerouac.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Blimey.
I love that they say that when you see the album cover, it says here, a tired Tom Waits being observed by a blonde prostitute as he exits a neon-lit cocktail lounge late at night.
As you do, of course.
As you do.
Yeah. Sounds like Castletown on a Saturday night. Anyway.
You're too.
Yeah, that's quite funny, Ellie. Anyway.
It's a nice, yeah, that evokes, talking about the music. Sorry. We're digressing. Talking about the music, it has that, it definitely has a feel. Tom Waits is very much that kind of feel, isn't he?
Yeah. Atmosphere.
Yeah.
He creates a tremendous atmosphere, doesn't he? You know, when he's doing live shows, you know. Absolutely beautiful. A beautiful performer and a very sensitive and talented writer. I was halfway through his well, he didn't do an autobiography, but somebody did a biography.
I remember I started reading that as well.
Yeah, and I need to finish it, actually.
Yeah. But and before we go on to the next track, I actually wanted to read you a review because I love this. This is by Janet Maslin from The Village Voice, and this is what she wrote about this track. It demands to be listened to after hours, when that cloud of self-pitying gloom has descended and the vino is close at hand.
Almost.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
And that was the Tedeschi Trucks Band.
Mellow.
Fantastic.
Beautiful.
A voice is just glorious, isn't it?
I feel I've been rocked.
Yes, you know, there's a sweetness to it, and you know, they deserve all the success that they get. And I know that they've come from sort of, well, certainly, you know, Derek Trucks have come from rock and roll background, you know, because with all his background with the Allman Brothers and stuff. But
you'd almost say royalty, but it's not applicable in his case.
No, you know? No, no. He's just a magnificent player. He is that, you know, probably one of
good
the...
Good soil.
Yeah. One of the best electric slide players in the whole world, you know. I mean, he's so sensitive and so many people try and copy him now. But I love as well the simplicity of his gear. He's got this old SG that he has, and he's got his Fender, I think they're Super Reverb amps, 410 things, and he just plugs into them. And I see these rig reviews and stuff on Premier Guitar, which is always worth watching, you know. And he has all these other amps, you know, and obviously people have given him these amps to, you know, to use live. But I know for a fact that most of his sound comes from those. When you see him rehearsing, and the fantastic live as well, they're just so beautifully controlled, you know.
Well, that song, Midnight in Harlem, is taken from their second album, their first live album, Everybody's Talking, which was released in 2012. And it was compiled from three nights of gigs.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah, because it's Derek said, Derek, as if we've met, but, you know, it says here, Trucks said. Many of the tracks came from the almost-cancelled Bridgeport CT show. There was a real loose feeling to it, which ended up being great. We used a lot of stuff from that night, that loose.
Yeah.
Keeping it free.
And, you know, I've got to say that it's only the Americans that can make a sound like that because, you know, the Brits, I always think, you know, it's like the Brit guitar players, the more edgy, harder, a bit more rock and roll, a bit sort of real, you know, grit, not bothered to make mistakes, you know. That is a mellifluous sound, a superb performance, and the groove of the musicians, they're just, you know, because they are Americans, they're Americans, you know, it's like, just that thing. And I think only they can do it to that extremely perfect level.
Mm. And do you know what? I really want to go and see them live. They're one of the bands that I will definitely have on my list of bands to see. I want to stand there, close my eyes and listen to them.
Yeah, I agree.
Love You by the Rolling Stones.
I love the psychedelic feel of this track. And even this in the background.
That's beautiful.
It is, isn't it? And you don't really notice it on the track, you know, because it, on vinyl, normally, I mean, our copy's so scratched at the end of that, it's going to be... So you can't really hear it, but there you are.
Wow, that was written by Keith Richards and Mick Jagger.
Of course. Well, that's not a surprise.
I said that as if that was a revelation, didn't I?
Yeah, it's like a Beatles record that's not written by Lennon McCartney. Anyway, but no, that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that is true.
I love the chaotic Mellotron, because everybody at that stage is using Mellotron, because the Moody Blues, you know, one of our favourite bands, they really kicked it all off. The Beatles used it at the beginning of Strawberry Fields, and now, of course, they're on. And is it right with the Beatles singing on this? Or?
Yeah, uncredited in the background, yeah, the backing vocals. And, of course, it's no surprise that Brian Jones was playing Mellotron.
Right.
At that point in the band, he was alive.
Yeah, because it was he turned into a bit of a mess at that stage, didn't he? The whole thing really went downhill, you know? Very, very sad, that, very sad. But I love it because it's such a different sound for the Stones, you know? And I think they do it really well. The drums sound great, you know? And was it Andrew Lou Oldham's last track that he was
that's
recorded?
That's true, the last time that he worked with them.
Yeah.
I think they recorded that as part of their Satanic Majesty's Request sessions.
Mm.
And there's tales of Allen Ginsberg being around for the recording. Apparently he was in London for a pro-marijuana rally in Hyde Park. And he met up with Jagger at Paul McCartney's house. And then he invited him to come to that night's session where McCartney and Lennon were going to do the uncredited backing vocals for We Love You. And apparently Ginsberg was there waving his Shiva beads and Tibetan oracle ring. Tibetan oracle ring.
What would we do without a Tibetan oracle ring, darling? You know what I mean?
I'm sorry. I really thought that said something else then.
You've gone all red again.
I have. So anyway, apparently, yeah, there was this kind of real vibe thing going on, which you can kind of feel in the track as well, can't you?
You can, yeah. It's a beautiful sound, beautiful sound. As is this.
Fallen below, devil may care what you wish for the best.
Atomic Rooster and Devil's Answer. My first single I ever bought. Honestly. So, you know, a lot of my friends have bought all sorts of things in the past, but this, I'm very proud that this is my first single I ever bought. And I remember taking it home and waving it around in front of my very prudish mother. She said, "What's that?" And I said, "It's a single." And we put it on the turntable, and it's The Devil's Answer. Well, I can tell you, she wasn't very bloody happy at all. And then I bought In the Hearing of Atomic Rooster. And great records. Black Snake, which I'm sure is going to feature in one of the future shows. Fabulous record. And Vincent Crane, sadly, you know, he died, well, a long time ago, pretty young. But he was probably one of the best, you know, Hammond organ players that Britain's ever produced, you know. Great sound, you know, great sound.
That sound of that track, is it was released in 1971, but it feels 1971.
Mm.
And it's like a scent of that time.
Yeah.
It just takes you, you're right there in that moment, aren't you? That's what I love about this style of music. It captures something in a vial of magicalness.
Well, that's it for this week's show, I'm afraid.
No way, it's gone so quick.
Incredible.
Well, okay. Well, if you want to contact us, we are on Instagram, Starlight Campbell. That's Starlight, L-I-T-E. Twitter, at Suzie, S-U-Z-Y, and Simon. And on Facebook.
Yeah, the show's available on Mixcloud, Spotify, iTunes, and iHeartRadio. Please tell your friends.
Onwards.